I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to Not Another Mummy Podcast with me, Alison Perry.
When you're pregnant, isn't there just so much to deal with? You've got worries about your health and the babies, morning sickness, tiredness, aches and pains. But my guest today suffers from a mental health condition called tocophobia, which affects her when she's pregnant. Jess Jones is a blogger and does stand-up comedy as the Fat Funny One. She is so worth following on Instagram. She's so funny and she does brilliant stuff about body confidence and being a mum. She's a mum of two and she's currently pregnant with her third child, and in all three pregnancies, Jess has experienced an extreme irrational fear of giving birth. She chats to me about what that was like and how her tocophobia developed, how it wasn't picked up on by midwives and doctors for quite a while, and how she was eventually diagnosed. Jess has approached her second and third pregnancies with a completely different mindset. And during our chat, she shares the very practical things that she has done to tackle tocophobia. Welcome, Jess. Do I call you Jess or Jessica?
Oh, Jess. Unless you're telling me off.
Jessica.
Yeah, that sounds very formal. Just Jess.
Jess. Yeah. I know you as Jess, but for some reason I've got written on my questions sheet, Jessica Jones.
That sounds so funny. She is a superhero.
I know. When I Googled you, I was like Googling, doing a bit of research, and I typed in Jessica Jones, and I was like, oh, no, not that one.
Oh, no, I am that one. Super strength and all that jazz. That could be me. I don't mind.
So you are the fat, funny one. And that's not me being, you know, like that's not me labelling you. This is what you, how you label yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And people find it really awkward to come up to me and say that, which I find really funny because they're like, if it's not you, I've just gone up to a random person. I'm going to, you the fat, funny one. And they'll be like, pardon me. But no, that's me.
Do you know what I love, though, about that is the fact that you are totally comfortable to call yourself funny. But yeah. I think that a lot of people, even if they think it themselves, like, oh, I can be a bit funny sometimes, or like maybe at school you were like the funny one in the class and you always got the laughs, to actually have the confidence to say, I'm funny.
Yeah, which is funny because actually I'm probably not to many people. and people do, I think comedy is one of those things that are a bit, it's subjective, but some people will think it's hilarious. I've watched comedians and gone, don't really get the point here. And others that have me absolutely belly laughing. And I think it was just, that was my role in all of my friendship circles. I was kind of the chubby, geeky one who liked to make a laugh and made fun of myself. Not necessarily other people, but I just wanted to be the one that made people laugh. And so I kind of went with it. And then the fat bit was just me owning the word again. It was used against me for so long. And I thought, no, like, this is me. I'm the one who likes to eat. I'm the one who's the chunkiest. I like to have a laugh.
So. And there's no shame in having a larger body than the next person.
Yeah, absolutely not.
I just think I'm so with you on this. And I really feel like this is a journey that I've been through as well in the last kind of 5-10 years, is accepting the way my body is and not beating myself up and not apologising for it and not trying to hide it. Yep. And I think that people like you who are out there, you know, and being really confident about your size. I mean, let's face it, you're not
You're not massive.
No, so I'm on average, I'm about size 16, depending on where I buy my clothes. And I always tell people about clothes sizes because I find them ridiculous, because I could be a 16 in one shop, a 10 at, okay, I don't think I've ever been a size 10, so that's probably age 10.
I once bought a size 10 parka jacket from Topshop, and I literally felt like, I think I kept it for about 7 years.
Just to prove that
I was like, I bought a size 10 jacket. It was obviously really oversized, but on me, it was quite snug.
I just think it's one of those things. I'm an average 16, but actually in society's world, that is big. That is a big size. And I'm very conscious of, actually, I'm still not, you know, some people go, but you're so tight. That's the first thing some people say to me when they mean, but you're actually not even fat. And I go, but actually in society's terms, I am.
Yeah.
And also I still have somewhat of a privilege of my size, because I can go into a high street shop and buy clothes.
Yeah.
And there's a massive portion of women who can't do that.
I mean, I get annoyed when I walk into... I'm trying to think where I've been into. Reese. I think Reese only goes up to a size 14. And I'm lucky if I can walk into a shop and put on a size 14 item of clothing and have it fit well. Yeah. I'm more likely to be a 16, sometimes an 18.
Yeah.
And I feel really annoyed when I go into Reese and see something I like and think, oh no, actually, that's probably not going to fit me.
Yeah.
So then how do people feel when they can't walk into the majority of high street shops?
Yeah, and I talk about that a lot. And it's funny because I did some work with Primark, who I absolutely love. And someone said to me, well, that's really unfair because, you know, you talk a lot about plus size women, but actually a lot of us can't buy our clothes from there because they only go up to size 22, which they do. And it is frustrating. And actually... brands like them are brilliant because I, you know, when I meet up with the teams, I'm like, look, what else can we do? Mm. Why is there a blocker here? Because there is a mass, like a huge portion of women who've got money ready to shop, who are fashionable and stylish, but just have bigger bodies. Why can't they buy clothes like everybody else?
I'm guessing for them, it's a financial decision. They're thinking, yeah, well, how many women are there who, you know, what's our potential market at that end of, you know, of size? And is it worth our while? Mm. So that's still not fair. It's not fair on those women that these brands are making those decisions based on money.
Which makes me laugh because actually there's a huge portion of money here ready to be spent. Mm. And actually, if you look at the brands who are going into curve ranges and offering that, they're making tons of money. And actually, that's a massive chunk of their income now.
Yeah.
Because actually, it shouldn't be a niche, but it is. That not every brand offers up to those sizes. So the brands that do really, really, really well. And I just keep saying to people, look, it's just clothes. Like, find something that you love, that you want to wear, and wear it all the time. Like me, I've probably had these jeans on for about 4 days in a row.
Oh my goodness.
But they're so comfy.
I'm honestly, like, I'm such a one-trick pony when it comes to fashion. At the moment, I'm obsessed with pleather leggings.
Oh, yeah, I saw.
I've got, like, three pairs, and I just rotate them.
Yeah, that's literally... I'm in maternity jeans at the moment, so these are, like, the only things that fit. And leggings. Leggings are life.
I think when you are pregnant, it's like your wardrobe just shrinks, doesn't it? And you either have to wear things endlessly or just be constantly washing them.
Yeah, so I've got two pairs of maternity jeans and a black dress.
That's it. On rotation.
Yeah.
So what we're going to discuss today isn't funny at all.
No. Which I guess is quite strange because a lot of what I talk about isn't funny. So my name doesn't sometimes match my content.
But no, but I think that it's really important to have people who... are willing to talk about the lighter side of life, but then also dig into issues, whether it is about weight and confidence or whether it's about mental health or all of that stuff. So I think that actually, to me, it works really well.
Thanks.
So we're going to talk about tocophobia.
Yes.
For anyone listening who isn't aware of tocophobia, what is it?
So the dictionary definition is the irrational fear of childbirth. So it is a very odd topic, and for someone who's on their third baby, I guess it seems very strange. But I had no idea what it was until I was diagnosed, so I had no clue. So I've got two daughters, and then I'm having a third now. Actually, having a boy now, but I'm having a third now.
Did I miss that news?
Yeah, I'm having a boy!
I can't remember I'm not sure if I knew that or
that
not.
That makes me sound really happy about it.
No, do you know what? I think, because last time I saw you, I think you were having your scan like a few days later.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you going to do a big gender reveal? What are you going to do?
No, we did with our family. We did record it and post it, but not on... Well, in fact, that was just horrendous because I asked my mum to hold the camera and she got so excited she, like, threw the phone across the room. And there's, like, literally 2 seconds of, like, blue dust and then there's nothing. But, yeah, we're having a boy this time, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited. But my first daughter, Sophia, is 7. And when I was pregnant with her, I was only 22. And not had any children before. And it's one of those things that you get excited about the kid bit, but you kind of forget the birth bit. It's kind of just something you don't really think about. And it wasn't until I got pregnant. And then I suddenly thought, oh, I've got to get this baby out. And it was probably about halfway through my pregnancy, I started to worry about the impending birth. And that's when you kind of get the questions from midwives, you know, what birth are you thinking about? And I was like, oh gosh, this actually has to happen. And so I went to antenatal classes, which were recommended, and they were brilliant, apart from the one about birth, where I just had a massive panic attack. Mm. So everything else, not a problem, talking about breastfeeding, talking about this, and then suddenly it just built up this massive anxiety. And every time I spoke to my midwife about it, I kind of got brushed off with, well, you know, it's the fear of the unknown. You've never had a baby before. This is completely natural.
And I guess she's probably dealing with those sort of questions all the time, and it's not necessarily immediately clear that you are somebody who has got an irrational big fear rather than just normal worries.
Yeah, and I was, according to her, a young mum. I was 22 and I'd never had any children before. So for her, it was like completely, and it is.
Yeah,
completely,
of course you're worried.
Worry.
Yeah.
But it escalated and escalated, and points where I realised actually it was beginning to become something else was I started to have really bad nightmares, really horrendous graphic nightmares. Where me and my baby just wouldn't survive. And that was kind of the end of it. And I had them constantly. I wouldn't sleep. I stopped being excited about having a baby because I just thought, I've got to get her out. And I don't want to do that. And it just built and built and built and built and built. And it was horrendous.
And how did it feel when you weren't being listened to by the midwives that you were seeing?
So
did that make it worse?
Yeah. And I think it was really difficult for me because actually they were listening to some degree because they were trying to be reassuring, but I don't think anyone really understood the extent of it. And it was like, I guess to their degree, your baby's got to come out. So, you know, don't worry about it. When it comes, we'll deal with it at the time. And birth is one of those things that you can't necessarily prepare for because anything can happen, and whatever happens, everyone's interested in you and your baby's safety. And I think that's what they kept saying to me, you know, whatever happens, however your birth looks, we want you both to be safe, so don't worry.
Didn't you have an appointment with a midwife where you were asking for a C-section?
Yeah.
And she kind of did she tell you off?
Yeah, so I ended up complaining, and so they made me see the midwife who was the head of the midwifery led unit, which was all about vaginal births. That's kind of what they do there, which makes sense. It's very much almost like a daily, you know, you go in and 6 hours later, you and your baby should be able to go home. So they invited me there, which I actually didn't want to go there, but I went for my appointment and I just said to her, look, all of the women in my family had C-sections, and they had my mother, my grandmother, my aunt. I didn't know anyone in my immediate family who'd had a successful vaginal birth, and they all had more than one child, but their first children all were very quite traumatic births and ended up in emergency section, and then subsequently they had sections after that. So I was a bit like, you know, if they've all had that, then surely I just skip the emergency bit and just, you know, make it really structured and then I'll be fine. And a lot of people were like, how could you think a C-section is better? That's all. And I said, because it was in a controlled environment. And that's the one thing I felt I didn't have with this natural labour. I just thought, I'm not going to be in control of anything. So I explained this to her and I just said, you know, I've looked at this, I've looked at this. And she just went through this page of risks, which everybody does. But she went extreme and she said some really horrendous things. And I never want to repeat them because I don't want anyone else to listen and then, you know, them having a C-section think, oh my goodness, because I don't want to go through them because actually she pushed them to the limit. Mm. Things that were, you know, 0.001% chance she would go on about. And she said things like, compare me to celebrities, which was really strange.
Well, it's like too posh to push, that
kind
of thing.
Yeah, she mentioned loads of celebrities, which was odd because she wouldn't compare me to my mother. She kept saying, you know, you're going to be different to your mum. You know, you know, she had this traumatic birth, but you'll be different. I said, well, you can't compare me to a celebrity who I've got no relation or any context to, but not relate me to my mum. That doesn't make sense.
No genetic link to Victoria Beckham.
And it's funny because that's who she mentioned. And actually that, if you look into Victoria Beckham's history, she didn't actually, wasn't too posh to put. She had an emergency section for her first child. So people always think, oh, posh boys had all these C-sections, but actually it was for medical purposes, but no one talks about that bit.
No.
So she made me feel really bad. And I left the appointment and I got to the car park and I was with Trevor, my husband, and I just was hysterical, like completely hysterical. And he rang my mum and was like, I don't know what to do. And my mum said, you take her back in there so they can see the extent of what's happening at
the
home.
Effect.
Yeah, they need to see that this is the point she gets to. So we went back in and this lovely student midwife was like, oh gosh, and took me into this little room and got me a cup of tea. And she just said, I don't know what to do. And I started to explain. She said, okay, you need to kind of write it down and tell us what happened. And so I had to go through this whole complaints process. So I had to write this really long letter. I think I sent it in an email and sent it off to the hospital. And then I got a letter from a consultant inviting me to come and see him. And as soon as I walked in, within minutes, he was like, okay, well, I'm going to diagnose you with something called tocophobia. And I was like, what is that? And he said, your fear is completely irrational. It's, you know, you're really struggling. And he said, and the best thing we can do is book you in for an elective section because it's going to be the only thing that probably calms you down.
My goodness, what did you feel when he said that? Was it a sense of relief?
Such relief. Like, he was so brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And he was one of the contributors to the NICE guidelines. So he knew so much and was so supportive. And just as you know, these are your rights. These are the things you can say. And they did pick it up with the midwife, who then actually wrote me an apology.
Wow.
A bit later. But it was so strange. He just was like, yeah, okay. And he was like, so you're going to be 39 weeks here. We'll just book you. It was so bizarre. It's like booking your hair.
Yeah.
Hairdressers. He was like, so can we do 2 o'clock on this day? I was like, what? That's so strange. But I suddenly had this sense of relief. And yes, of course, I still had this real fear of a C-section. You know, he still went through the risks with me. They have to.
Yeah.
But I just felt it's going to be controlled. Someone's going to be there and they're all going to be there and they're all going to know what happens. And, you know, it's all going to be fine. And it was. It was. I didn't have any issues. And it kind of just, I don't know, after that, once my baby was here, I kind of forgot.
I was going to ask you that, whether there was any lasting effects.
No, I mean, some of the things she said to me, yes. And I remember some of the things she's saying to me really stuck with me. And I remember asking him, like, she said this would happen. And he was like, pardon? And he, you know, yeah, he was like, yes, but that's, you know, not something that's ever happened in my career. Don't, you know, try not to worry. And he was really, really reassuring. And kind of after that, I think apart from the things that she said that kind of made me go, oh my gosh, it's going to happen. I felt much better. And the only thing on the day is I was booked in for the morning and then there were a couple of emergency sections that had to go before me. So I had to wait. And I remember getting to the afternoon and being like, OK, now I'm really anxious. Yeah. I just want this over and done with.
Also, you can't eat anything, can you?
So no, which is so annoying because actually, if you're in an emergency section, you could have had a whole buffet.
That's
before.
So
but no, you couldn't eat. So I was nil by mouth. I remember shouting at Trevor because he was eating a sandwich. I was like, get out. Oh. I just want to eat. But no, she came at 2 o'clock and my mum was there in the hospital and Trevor came in with me. And it was lovely. Like, you kind of do. And I think actually even now meeting loads more mums, which I guess I didn't have many mum friends at the time, a lot of people say no matter what birth you have, it is afterwards. You forget to some degree because your baby is here.
Yeah.
And then you're suddenly in love with this tiny human and you forget a little bit.
Do you think not having mum friends at the time, do you think that perhaps contributed a little bit? Do you think that it might have been easier if you'd had people to chat to and hear positive birth stories from? And
yeah, although going to baby groups after, no one really shouts about the positive birth stories and everyone tells you how horrendous their vagina looks after.
Yeah.
It's like the first, I don't even know anyone's name, and then like you know their birth story, and then like halfway down the conversation you're like, oh sorry, what was your name?
Yeah.
Like I know everything.
I know what a car crash your vagina looks like. But what was your name again?
What was your name again? I know your kid's name, but you're like Sally's mum, yeah?
Yeah, it's always someone's mum, isn't it?
Always. And actually that was one of the things I noticed a lot more after, was how quick people were to tell you their horrific birth stories. But very few people told you about their positive birth stories. And when they did, they were always really shut down. So the mums that said, you know, I did hypnobirthing. Oh, whatever, you know, I took this drug. And it was almost like this birth competition sometimes. And
it's
I got
really
so frustrated.
It's really hard, isn't it? I mean, I kind of think I definitely contributed to that when I was a new mum. But I think for me, it was like a coping mechanism.
Absolutely.
Because I had felt traumatised by my birth. And I felt like all I was hearing was positive birth stories and the hypnobirthing. And I honestly felt like there was this big conspiracy against people telling the truth about birth. So I was like evangelical, but like, oh my God, it's the worst thing in the world to give birth, which is so unhelpful.
But it's also a safe space to some degree because it's people who have had children who are going to understand where you're coming from. So then, you can say it to, I guess, talk about your birth with other mum friends and you would maybe friends who haven't had children.
Well, I made the mistake of when my eldest was like 7-8 weeks old, going into the office like you do with like your baby and everyone crowding around me, and then like, what was it like giving birth? And I didn't know that one of my friends was pregnant. She was like in the early stages, and I was like, it was traumatic, it was horrific.
And it was like months later, she was like, oh my God, Alison, when you came in and you said that, I was literally like sweating and heart palpitations, yeah. like thinking, oh my goodness, how am I going to do this?
But it's not just even the stories we tell. If you look at birth on telly, if you look at birth in movies, even when you're kind of taught, it's this, especially when you, I guess, related to movies or soaps, it's this thing where someone's sweating and crying and screaming and in pain, and it's everything about it is scary and horrible, and that's what the kind of the picture we're painted.
And even like one born every minute. I mean, I was obsessed with watching it. I was going to say actually, because if you have got a real fear, that's probably the worst thing that you can watch.
Absolutely. So never watched it ever. It was just the worst. I couldn't grasp why it was, because to some degree it's an entertainment program, which I found really bizarre. But I just couldn't watch it. Never watched it. And even when I went for I went to the appointment with the midwife, and even with the consultant, they offered to give me a tour around the delivery room. And I was like, no, that's like hell on earth to me. Like, I don't want to hear anybody in pain. That's just going to feed this whole fear. Yeah. So I pretty much avoided anything. And it's only when I had Isabella and I went to a hypnobirthing course that I watched my first proper birthing video.
They do like to show you that at the I had hypnobirthing as well, and watching this kind of like grainy YouTube video that they were of like this amazing hypnobirth they do like to kind of say this is what it could be
and
like.
That was the first time, and I remember sitting there thinking, don't leave the room, and Trevor couldn't come with me because he was working that weekend, so I went on my own. And I went with Siobhan Millen. She's brilliant. And
that's Siobhan from the Positive Breath Company.
Yeah, she's so lovely. And she knew why I was going, and I'd explained that before. And I remember her kind of looking over at me, and I thought, no, I'm going to sit here. And it wasn't on the first day, so I'd had a couple of days. And actually, I was like, oh, really? Like, someone, that lady's so calm, and the baby's not crying, and she's not crying. And it just helped feed, actually. Not every birth is going to be screamy and painful and scary. Mm. And it just helped ease that, because it gave me another example of what birth could potentially look like.
That's the thing, is that we've got no point of reference.
No.
You know, first time round, there is absolutely nothing apart from your TV shows, your one born every minute.
Yeah.
In terms of personal experience, we don't know what it's going to be like.
No, and then my personal experience in terms of knowing birth stories was all my family who'd had all traumatic births. So I had no positive reference when it came to delivering a baby at all. And in between Sophia and Isabella, I miscarried. And I remember being that just feeding this fear even more. So when I had Isabella, we didn't tell anybody for a while. And I was kind of a bit like, okay, I need to do something about this, because I cannot go through the whole pregnancy just not enjoying myself, because it's, you know, I'm doing something amazing, I'm carrying new life, I really want to enjoy this, which is why I went to the course.
When you got pregnant for the second and third time, when you had that positive pregnancy test, did you feel happy, or did you feel like, oh, here we go again?
A bit of both. I think there's part of you that's like, oh my gosh, this is great. But then there was this, oh gosh, I've got to go through this again. And I guess that the only silver lining to some degree was that my C-section was positive with Sophia in the end. And I had quite a nice experience. There wasn't any rush or anything scary that actually happened. So I had some sort of, you know, confirmation that we're both safe and happy. So we will be safe and happy next time. But with Isabella, I really wanted to go down and looking at a potential vaginal birth. I wanted to see, you know, I always wanted to challenge myself. And I did Sean's course. I bought books. I did listen to every hypnobirthing meditation.
You must have been the calmest pregnant lady ever.
I really enjoyed my pregnancy with Bella, actually. But then she was early. And I ended up getting sepsis, and I actually was really poorly and had an emergency section. I remember saying to the midwife, you don't know how much I've spent. I've spent so much money to have, like, I'm going to have vaginal birth. I need to, because, you know, I've spent all this money to get to a place where I'm calm and excited to have this baby. And now you're telling me I have to have an emergency section. I was like, oh, if I knew that, I would have just put the blooming elective at the beginning.
How did you get sepsis?
So my waters broke at 36 weeks, 5 days. And I actually thought I'd wet myself. I did the school run, and one of the school mums was like, oh, you must be due soon. I was like, yeah, but I've still got work for a couple of days. And I said, oh, but funny, like, I wet myself yesterday. I said, but it didn't smell like wee, which was good. And she was like, oh.
Yeah.
And then a couple of school mums were like, maybe you just ring your midwife? And I was like, okay. Like, I was like, it'd probably be fine.
Overreacting.
Yeah, I was like, it's fine. And they were like, and then one of them said, oh, that happened to me. And I was like, oh, okay. So I rang my midwife and she was actually at the day unit in the hospital and said, just pop it in. And she said, but put a pad on so I can just see if you're still leaking or actually just wet yourself. And she went, don't worry if you have, like, no one's going to say you're silly. You know, it's better we just check.
Yeah.
And by the time I got there, she was like, okay, your waters have broken. But we want to get you to 37 weeks, which is just 2 days away. So I had some injections and
the steroid injections.
Yeah.
They're really sore, aren't they?
So sore. And so I got sent home. So I went home and they booked me in for an induction 3 days later, so 72 hours later. And then I did the thing everyone does and Googled what I should
That's
be doing.
The worst thing you worst could thing. Do.
And most people were saying you really should, if your waters have broken, deliver your baby within 24 to 48 hours. So I kept ringing out, and she was like, you'll be fine. And then by the Friday night, so I was booked in for the induction on the Saturday morning. Because I remember saying to her, but it was the middle of the night that this happened, so surely that was Tuesday night, so actually that's going to be too long. And she was like, honestly, you'll be fine. And I wasn't. On the Friday night, I suddenly felt really ill, and I was shivering, but my temperature was really high. And I said, Trevor, I don't feel well. And he was like, you almost look green. He was like, something's not right. And he just put me in the car and took me to the hospital. We rang the midwife on the way. And I remember it being about 5 o'clock and the traffic was horrendous. And I had on my coat, his coat. And then he was panicking and my neighbour was brilliant and picked up Sophia. And we had this mad rush. And I got to the hospital, got to the day unit. And the midwife that was there wasn't mine. It was a different lady. And she put, you know, the monitor thing they put on your belly, and she went off and she took my temperature and did a few bits. And I could hear her on the phone to the delivery suite. And she was going, you need to come and get this lady. Something's not right. And I was going, is she talking about me? And Trevor was like, no, you're fine. And there was nobody else. I was like, she's talking about me. She's talking about me. I know she's talking. He was like, no, you're fine. And he did so well to just try and keep me calm. But it was all these things that I feared and had tried to push out was suddenly like
all the things
back.
That you were saying that'll never happen.
Yeah. And was proved when I had Sophia that actually everything could be fine. I was like, oh gosh. And she just kept ringing them and they were so busy, and it's not their fault at all. And they were so busy and she kept ringing them and you need to come up and get this lady. She was like, I'm going to bring her down to you. She can't be here. You need to take her to the
How much time had passed at this point?
She wasn't actually born until after 10, so I was there for about 2 hours, and I went down and the doctor came to see me and I got moved around and monitored. I got given some fluids and some antibiotics. I couldn't keep all my coats on because they're like, you're raising your temperature and you know you can't do that. And I went back and forth. And anyway, I finally went down to delivery and I went into a suite which had a pool and a birthing bowl. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is it.
Yeah.
You know, I've paid all this money. I know what I'm going to do.
This is the birth I want.
Yeah. And the midwife was like, oh no, you're just in here until we take you. We're going to have to take you for an emergency section. I was like, are you kidding me? But she actually had studied tocophobia for her dissertation. And there was a lot of midwives who hadn't. They knew about it, but hadn't done. It's not something that's widely talked about. And she happened to do it because her sister suffered. And I suddenly just felt this sense of calm because I thought, someone knows. They don't think I'm crazy or being unreasonable.
They understand.
She understands. And she was like, oh, and I never forget, her name was Jade. And she said, oh, my sister had tocophobia and I studied it for my dissertation because it was really important to me about how I could support women like my sister. And suddenly I think I just felt like I was in safe hands. And I actually shouldn't say emergency section. It was more unplanned section because an emergency section happens within 8 minutes. That's a real emergency. And actually this was just an unplanned section that needed to happen quickly. And they're two very different things. And I think we use the term emergency section a lot.
We do, don't we?
And actually an emergency section is mum normally has to, you know, go to sleep. They have to deliver your baby within 7 minutes. And from start to finish, that's how long it normally takes.
Yeah.
But an unplanned section is, you know, we just need to get this baby out quicker than waiting for you to deliver them vaginally.
It hasn't been booked in, you know, weeks ahead.
Yeah. And I think that the terminology makes a massive difference. So it wasn't an emergency. No one was, like, you know, rushing around and you know, I didn't have to go under general anaesthetic or anything like that. And it still was quite calm and they were still really nice. And I asked for things like, which I felt empowered to ask for, like the lights being dimmed slightly and all these things that I just never thought about that still made me feel like I had somewhat more control and it could be how I wanted it to be. And then she came, but we were still both quite poorly and I ended up staying in hospital for 8 days. So it kind of then threw this curveball of, actually, things can go wrong, but do they go wrong? Because actually we're both okay.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Things do go wrong, yeah. But you got through it, yeah. And you have got two healthy daughters. And yeah. I know that there is a bit of an issue with the kind of obsession with how healthy the baby is,
yeah.
Because actually your health matters too.
Yeah, and your mental health. Yeah, totally. Yeah, we're both on the same page. And I think that's what I really struggled with, because for me, and happy mums make happy babies as well. And I think there was a lot of pressure to be okay. And I personally don't like hospitals. I find, you know, which sounds ridiculous because I wanted an elective section first time around. But I don't like staying there for long lengths of time, especially in like shared wards when everybody's feelings and emotions are kind of stuck in this room and you're kind of trapped in this room and everybody's, you know, emotional and some people are in a lot of pain, and I find it really hard
That's
to deal
quite
with
intense,
mentally.
Isn't
it's really
it?
Intense. And I remember that because, again, that ward was so busy that there was a woman who was in active labour who came in like the day after I had Isabella and was like, bless her, in the middle of the night within the shared ward, and we all had our crying babies, and she was like in active labour. She did amazing. I remember her mooing, and I was like, yes, I heard that in my course, you go mum. And she was brilliant. But I find it really hard, and it's such a mental struggle for me. And midwives are so stretched, and yeah. I did have one who sat me down at one point and she gave me a cup of tea and just was like, are you okay? And I was like, I just want to go home. But there was so much focus on Isabella, and actually she was fine, and it was me who actually was quite poorly, but there was still focus on her, and I just want to go home.
Yeah.
If she's fine, let me just go
yeah.
home. But yeah, I think it's difficult. It's really difficult because, you know, we all want everyone to be okay, but there just does need to be some consideration, I think. But it's time. Have people got time to do that? And we just don't.
Yeah, it's the time and resources, isn't it?
Yeah.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
So then third time, well, fourth pregnancy.
Yeah.
What are you doing this pregnancy to, I mean, you know, it's a mental health condition. Mm. Do you have access to any kind of therapy or support?
No. So nothing has been offered to me so far. So I've actually gone a bit strange in this one. So obviously with Isabella, I went full hog in trying to do something about it myself. And this time I've almost gone into a little bit of a state of denial. And I don't discuss my due date, which not many people liked, which I still find quite strange.
I think that's really strange. And actually that's how I learned that you have tocophobia was because you did an Instagram post where you said, I'm not going to say anything about my due date. Mm. And I thought, I totally get it. And I actually think that's okay regardless of any mental health conditions.
Absolutely. I think due dates are somewhat ridiculous. Babies can come between 37 and 42 weeks, and actually due dates and when they're supposed to be are different depending on country, which is ridiculous because all women's anatomy is pretty much the same. I'm sure we're not that different from a French lady.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where we are geographically. Yeah,
exactly. And actually in France, 42 weeks is normally your due date, not 40. And so there's this big difference, and actually psychologically I think it puts a lot of pressure on people that my baby's going to come on the 1st of this month, and it's like, no hun, it might come before or after. And I think when you're looking forward to that day, and then after that, my baby's late, and it's really distressing.
I think psychologically it can be quite hard.
Yeah. Is your baby here? When was your due date? Her due date was last week. Oh, let me text her. No. And I think I didn't want any of that, especially when all of that due date talk is around birth. It's about when is this birth going to happen, and I didn't want to focus on that. So I just said to everyone, my baby will be here by Easter. And and he will, and that's kind of sufficient, unless you're delivering the baby or in my immediate family. In fact, I don't even think I've discussed my due date with my mum. And unless I go down the elective section route, I wouldn't, because there's no
that's
point.
That's fine.
Because again, for her, she's like, well, until we know what's happening, I can't do anything anyway.
People, whether it's family members or strangers on the internet, I think there's a real sense of ownership when it comes to pregnancy and children and babies. And it's like, this is no one's experience apart from you and Trev and maybe, you know, your daughters in terms of them knowing when their family is going to change.
Yeah, and I know it's exciting. I know people aren't doing it because they're malicious or
being of course not.
It's just a really exciting time for everyone. But I always recommend to people when they say I'm pregnant, but don't tell anybody when you're due, or just give them a month, or give them, you know, you don't know when that's going to be, and you don't want to put added pressure on yourself because you'll already be stressing out. But I didn't tell anyone my due date, and that has helped somewhat. But also, I've kind of gone down a bit of a, I'm not making any decisions, and I thought by now I would have been a bit, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to have an elective section because I might as well. I've had two emergencies before. I've avoided doing much research this time round because I think actually I kind of know where I'm at.
Well, you are your research. You've done it twice before.
Yeah, and I think it's really difficult because actually, so now I have had some meetings around birth with my midwife, who is lovely. But actually, if you have had two sections before, you're not necessarily automatically booked in for another one, which historically it used to be. But they have changed it where I live. I don't know if that's nationally. But you don't naturally have to go down that route again, especially because actually the first one was an elective and it wasn't anything to do with any physical complication. And it was only Isabella that had to be unplanned. So there's kind of a talk around, you know, you could potentially go for a water birth or do it. You know, I've got that option. And actually, part of me kind of, I think I kind of hoped that I wouldn't have an option.
Yeah.
So that would help because it would take that decision away. And I'd be like, okay, great, elective, yep, great. Book me in, what date? Brilliant, I'll get my hair and nails done the day before. Fab. And actually, it's not that. So I've got some thinking to do. But I think I just keep telling myself, you know, everybody wants the best thing for me and the baby. Midwives, consultants, doctors, whoever they may be. And it's the one thing I always say to people who are very nervous, because I get lots of messages from women going, I feel the same way as you. You know, I haven't been diagnosed yet, but I think I need to be, or I'm at this point. And I constantly say, do you know what? I don't know your own situation. However, I do know there's not one medical professional that I have come across that doesn't want what's best for you and your baby. Both of you. Both have to be safe and sound. And it's on their hands if you know, God forbid, if anything happened. And it doesn't. They're so good at trying to make sure everyone's okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you have to kind of keep in mind. And that's what I've tried to keep in my mind, is actually, whoever's there on the day or whenever it happens or however that birth looks, everyone's interested, both of us.
So in this pregnancy, just hearing you talk, it sounds like your anxiety levels are much lower.
Yeah.
Are you having the same kind of, you know, panic attacks or, you know, dreams or irrational fears?
Definitely not. I haven't had any nightmares so far. I've definitely not been so panicky. I think also I don't have time. I've got two other kids now, so whether I wanted to or not, I have no time for panic attacks when I've got nappies to change and kids to drop off at school. But also I think it's that reassurance of you're both going to be okay, to just, you know, whatever happens, happens, just take it in your stride. But again, I think that sense of denial, I'm not thinking about it too heavily, whereas I focus so much on it with Sophia negatively, and then with Isabella focus so much on it to try and get to a better place, then actually this time around I'm almost just kind of not really thinking about it, and I've thrown myself into work and I'm doing a lot of work and I'm constantly at work, so I think I'm almost in my head going, oh, I'll just deal with it when it comes to it.
That's really interesting though, because that is a really different way of approaching it to Isabella's pregnancy. Neither, you know, there's no right or wrong, but it really feels like those are polar opposites in terms of, but I can see kind of why you would do both of those things, actually. Yeah. What the motivations behind both reactions.
Yeah, I have booked back onto Siobhan's course. I'm going to redo it because it was so helpful before. And I think one of the things I loved about it was actually, whilst yes, it was, you know, a focus around vaginal birth and hypnobirthing, actually she teaches you ways on how to use those skills in any birth. So whether you have, you know, an unplanned section, whether there is an emergency situation, you're almost taught to have those calming, you know, thoughts and to really bring yourself into a place where you feel okay and you feel in control. And actually, I almost want an injection of that, no matter what my birth looks like, because I think that's so important. I think there's this big misconception that hypnobirthing is a bit hippie and only if you want no drugs and you're going to have this natural home birth. And actually, it's just about your mindset and just making sure you're calm and in control and feel safe and happy. And I think I need an injection of that. So I'm going to see her, well, going to the course in January in London. And I'm excited about that because I know I felt quite good after it. But I guess I'm going in with a slightly different
mindset.
Yeah, whereas before I went in going, right, I'm going to have a vaginal birth. I'm coming in to learn all the, you know, I want it all. Let's go. Mm. And this time I'm going in more to say, actually, I just want a bit of reassurance.
Yeah. I've had Siobhan on the podcast.
Oh,
and I think she's brilliant, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's a machine. I mean, if you want to see an example of a lady who has built up a business whilst, I think she was a single mum, I think, when she first started it. And she's got three kids now. And yeah, she's like just bringing out new products, new things all the time.
And really accessible products.
Yeah, well, this
is turning into a massive ad for Siobhan.
Well, this is
more.
The point I was going to make was that she's got her digital pack, her digital course,
like
which is really affordable. And that's what I love about Siobhan is that actually hypnobirthing, a lot of people think, oh, it's really expensive. And it means me going along, you know, every Saturday to a church hall and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And actually what she has done is she's created these YouTube videos and it's about 35 quid.
Even the YouTube videos alone, which are free and you can go and have a look at, have been so helpful. And she also shares other people. And I think one of the things I enjoyed was that she talked about her own experience. So she's the whole point and her whole motivation was because she suffered with a traumatic birth. And so it was almost like she knows what I'm feeling. She kind of gets it.
Yeah.
And I think that helped massively. And there's Millie Hill.
Yes.
I love her. And there's so many women out there who are sharing stuff that is accessible and in some cases free for people to go and find out and get the support that they need. And I shout about both of them and I've paid, you know, for products from both of them because I find it so important. And she's just brilliant at going, you know, you'll be fine. Yeah. And I remember texting her actually, I'm pregnant again, I'm coming back to your course. And she was like, okay, cool, like you'll be fine. Even Millie Hill, I remember messaging or emailing her and she replied.
That's
and was
so
like
good.
Okay, well, look at this chapter in my book, you know, what else can you answer? And they're such advocates for positive births, but however that looks, not just natural vaginal. And I think that's what people assume.
Yeah.
And actually it's just having a positive experience all around and feeling empowered to ask for what you want.
I really want to read Millie Hill's latest book, How to Give Birth Like a Feminist.
I've got it. I haven't started reading it yet. And I'm so excited to read it because it looks brilliant.
Yeah.
And again, it's about empowering people to make choices. And if you're not comfortable with something to say, I'm not comfortable with that. And I think that's the bit we don't always go with because we just think, well, I'll just let everybody take control because they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But actually, you know your body as well.
I have to say, in both of my births, I don't know whether I've given birth twice or three times. Three times.
You did get a 2-for-1.
So I get confused. Twin mums, tell me. But yeah, I think I've been quite guilty of just kind of whatever the people, you know, with the white coats say or whatever the people wearing the scrubs say. You know, they're the experts, they're in charge.
Yeah, and actually a good medical professional will tell you what you need to know, but also leave you to take some ownership and some control over what you want as well, if it's not a medical emergency. And I think that's the balance. And just like that consultant did, he kind of let me feel at least somewhat empowered and understood and said fine. And yes, he explained the risks, they have to, but he still was like, you know, but you've got these options too. And I was like, huh? Options? What do you mean? And I think it's about being able to say, I'm not comfortable with that. I don't really like that. Why do I have to have that? And we don't ask those questions at all. And that's, I think, part of what I loved about both Millie and Siobhan is that they're saying that. Mars Lord is another amazing doula.
She's a doula, isn't she?
Who's incredible, again, about empowering people to make those decisions and say, I'm not comfortable with that. Or, you know, can I ask a question about that? Or just explain that to me again. Because it's your body, you know, it's quite, whether you have a vaginal birth or a C-section, it's quite invasive. There's a lot that goes through. And you want to be able to have, you know, a position to say, can you just tell me why I need to take that?
Yeah.
What's that exactly for?
Yeah. And I found even things like once the baby's here, things like the vitamin D injections or even like when they say, you know, we could give you an injection to for the placenta to come out more quickly. stuff like that. I was like, I don't really know what the right answer is here. And actually, just whatever you say, I in that respect, I probably was quite unprepared.
Yeah.
And there are some people who would go into birth knowing before exactly what they want in that situation. Where I was like, I don't know. Yeah. Whatever you think. Yeah. What do most people do?
Yeah, and you do, don't you? Just go with the majority because you're like, I don't know what happens here.
What are the pros and cons?
Yeah, and no one's got time to give you that.
No, because they're like, well, we're doing it now.
We haven't got a choice. I've got five of the women to go and see.
Yeah, have you got a flip chart? Have you got a PowerPoint presentation?
You could just let me research it and come back to you tomorrow. That'd be grand. Yeah. And it's just, no one's got the time for that. And I think it's just about resourcing that information yourself and being able to be in a position where you go, okay, I feel more comfortable asking about why I need that. So even this time around when she said, you know, you could potentially have a water birth, the first thing I said, which is, it's crazy, which I don't think I ever knew existed, was, oh, does that mean you've got wireless monitoring? So, you know, who even knew what that was before? I wouldn't have known what that was. But actually, it means that you can monitor your baby whilst you're in the pool. Oh. And some hospitals don't have that. So, which is why some women who need, you know, monitor, their babies monitored, can't go into the pool, because you can't obviously have the BP things in the pool with you. But actually, some have wireless monitoring, which are waterproof. So you can. So all these things that I just never knew. And I was so proud when I asked that.
I didn't know that existed.
Yeah. So there are options. So for example, when people say you can't have a water birth because you need monitoring, okay, have you got the facilities to do this? No. Okay, well, I'll find another local hospital that does. All those things that I never thought were even possible.
With my first, I didn't even know that you could choose where to have birth.
Yeah.
I went along to my GP. They booked me into our local hospital and it was fine. And I did give birth there. But it wasn't until I went to my NCT classes, kind of when I was maybe about 6 or 7 months pregnant, that the NCT teacher was saying, well, of course, you've all got choices and you've all chosen by now. And I was like, what do you mean choose, huh?
Yeah.
Choose. So, yeah, you know, I kind of feel a bit like at the beginning of your pregnancy, your first pregnancy, you almost need a bit of an antenatal session then to be like, right, guys, this is what the next 9 months looks like.
Yeah.
These are the choices you're going to have to make. And these are, you know, the things that you need to consider.
Yeah. And I think that's why and a lot of this came from Shafal's course when she talked about hospitals. I was like, what do you mean? And then it was actually look for a hospital that have midwives that specialise in mental health that maybe your local hospital doesn't have. And my local hospital now does have a team, and they're brilliant, who specifically support mums who have either had previous sections or suffer with any mental health issue, whether that's pregnancy related or otherwise. And it's almost being that proactive team rather than waiting to the last minute and then going, okay, someone's got an issue here.
We need to deal with this.
And so it is helpful. And actually, should they not have had that facility, I may have looked for another hospital that does. So I could have the support that I know I need. And I do feel like I probably should do a bit more, because I'm telling everyone now, go and do this and get the research. And I'm in denial about being pregnant again. I'm just not going to do anything.
No, I don't know. I think, you know, regardless of whether someone has togophobia or not, the third time, you know, getting to this stage of pregnancy, you're going to be a bit more relaxed about it. And I was probably the same, actually, when I was pregnant with the twins. I was probably a little bit kind of, oh, it'll be fine. Oh, I do need to look into that. And I do need to think about this, but I'll do it another day.
Yeah.
I think you've got that less kind of sense of urgency.
Yeah, and I think so Isabella was early, which is the only thing that's making me feel a little bit like I need to make sure I've planned around that. And I go on tour in February when I'm pretty heavily pregnant. And I've kind of gone, is this the right thing to do? Am I making myself really busy up until the last minute? No, we'll see what happens.
It's going to be great at taking your mind off things. Well, you know, if you really are still going to be in denial by February, that's perfect.
Yeah, and I have offered any midwives to come for free just in case I, like, you know, accidentally have to have my baby on stage.
Bring the hot towels. Why do people talk about hot towels during birth?
I've never seen a hot towel. No.
But it's like a real thing, like, bring the hot towels.
Yeah, and nobody, it's funny actually, because it's only Call the Midwife. It's probably the only programme about birthing to some degree that I watch. I guess there's more stories to it than just giving birth to babies, but they covered an episode on tocophobia, and I remember loads of people messaging me on Instagram going, oh my gosh, are you watching Call the Midwife? They're talking about tocophobia. And I was like, no way. And I was so happy that they covered it. One, because I don't even know if it was even actually a thing back then, but they covered it, and I was so pleased that someone somewhere had said, this is a real thing that we need to discuss, because again, I think it does get brushed off slightly as, of course you're scared, you don't understand.
Yeah, I really feel like there are probably a lot of women who have suffered from this in the past and really probably have just been you know, dismissed, yeah. and, you know, health professionals and family members are probably like, oh, she's just, you know, everyone's scared of giving birth.
Yeah. And everyone does it and everyone's fine, so get over it. Yeah. Those are the sorts of things that get thrown around. And that's so scary because actually there is, and I guess it's that, where does the line get drawn as to this is just a very normal feeling to actually you're now borderline, this is completely irrational. And for me, it was the lack of sleep, it was the dreams, it was the fact that I was adamant I wasn't going to have this baby because I couldn't physically do it. And I always say to people, you just talk about it and don't stop talking about it. Make sure someone hears you and have a partner or someone with you that can empower you when you don't feel like you can say anything. Because we all do it. We all go into these consultant midwife appointments with this list of things we're going to say and we're going to tell them and we're going to do. And then you get there and you say nothing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you just sit there and go, okay, okay, yep, I'll do that. Okay, brilliant. And so it's really important to have someone who will go, well, actually, can we ask about this? Yeah. And that will prompt you and empower you to have those conversations.
So if anyone's listening and they are thinking that actually this sounds familiar, this sounds like something that I'm feeling right now, are there any resources? Are there any websites, any kind of organisations that are helping with this kind of thing?
So I know Millie Hill in her book, The Positive Birth, she talks about fear and kind of where you can go to get some help. I know that locally, if you look at your NHS website for your maternity services, they will have a lot of the time a specific unit that focuses on mothers who suffer with any mental health condition. So whether actually you're just anxious in general and worried that that will escalate to something else, it's well worth mentioning. Also, and I know I say this with a bit of caution, the internet, because nobody go and Google birth, that's just like the worst thing, but actually there's a lot of support networks out there about positive births, and actually one of the things I found really helpful, especially with Isabella, was following groups that were just about positive birth stories. I know Siobhan's got a Facebook group as well. There's loads of little communities. There's literally, if you just put positive birth in Facebook, there's a lot of local communities as well where you can meet with other mums who just share positive experiences. And actually that alone is so reassuring, because if you're in any other mum group or, you know, where people just talk about birth very openly, it's not always going to be something positive that, you know, that you want to hear or see, because a lot of people post pictures and images as well and videos and all sorts of stuff. But they're really, really good. And anything to do with hypnobirthing or meditation, I absolutely recommend to everybody. And I used to plug in every night and listen to positive affirmations about birth. And again, no matter what your birth looks like, they were so empowering. And actually, I had a lady once message me and say, you know, I'm just even scared to try and get pregnant because I know that this is, you know, I'm going to end up being so scared. And I said to her, actually, the affirmation cards I have, yes, they're, you know, for while you're pregnant, but actually they kind of affirm to you that your body can do this. So it probably encourage you to think, actually, I can do this.
Yeah.
So I was like, there's no wrong or right time to start getting that and start having those positive affirmations in your life that say, you know, your body can do this. You're going to be okay. You know, I will have a safe and beautiful birth, however that looks. And I said, start that now so that your body and your mind are ready, you know, to go down that route when you are.
Yeah.
And those are kind of my choices, but my biggest thing is having a supporter, having someone who will shout your corner. And if you are too hysterical one day, or there is a point where you can't speak for yourself, there is someone who will speak on your behalf and has all your interests at heart and will say, no, that's not what she wanted. She wanted to do this. And my husband's really, Trevor's really, really good at that. And he is brilliant at saying all the right things. And although I never forget, I always say to people, when I had Sophia and I was head in an elective section, we'd done all these antenatal classes and he was sat by my head and he was going, you're doing so much, just breathe. And he was like, we had in for nine or in for eight and out. And I was going, you realise I'm actually not doing anything. Like, I'm completely numb from my chest down. Like, I don't know what's going on. I was like, you're doing so well. But he had been taught to, like, be this big support. And he just thought, I'm going to throw everything they've told me to say at her. And I remember just staring at him going, it's fine. I don't need to breathe like that. I'm totally okay at the minute.
It probably helped you, though, having that positivity in your ear.
Yeah, and it was brilliant. And when I had Isabella, he was the same. Although he took a selfie with the anaesthetist, which was hilarious. They literally just, and I actually really liked that environment. And he said to them, he said, you know, even though there's some plan, Jess likes talking. She likes the feel of, you know, not too surgical, not too clinical,
yeah.
that will make her worried. And they were super chill. I remember the surgeon saying to me, so you've got any holidays booked?
Oh, I love that.
I was like, you are initial saying to the nurse, oh, are you good? She was like, yeah, we're going on this holiday. And they were like,
that's
brilliant.
What you need. I can't say the word, anaesthetist,
yep.
Who was really chatty as well. Yeah. And she was so kind of like, just taking my mind off it and
absolutely.
Distracting me from what yeah. was going on. And every now and again she would say, that's one baby out, or, you know, like, yeah. you know, give me an update on what was happening.
Yeah.
But then she would just be chatting about, like, oh, what do you do?
And he led that for me and kind of said to them, because I was too busy, you know, oh, okay, yeah, this, do this, you've got to have this. And I kind of wasn't really paying much shit, but having someone who will say, just keep her a bit distracted, or can we have a chat? And he very much led that conversation.
That's
and it was
good.
Brilliant. And it really helped. And I just definitely think everyone needs one person, just one person who will be an advocate for you and go, I totally get what you mean. Whatever you need, let's go for it.
Let's do
it. It's probably the biggest and probably the best thing.
Fantastic. Jess, I massively appreciate you coming on to talk about
Anytime.
This because I just think it's so important. And I think that the more we talk about this stuff, the more awareness we're raising
yeah.
and the more helpful that is to women who are pregnant and having these irrational fears and,
yeah.
you know, giving them the, you know, empowering them to have those conversations with health professionals that they're seeing. So yeah. thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I say this every week, but big thank you to you for listening. I couldn't do it without you. Do hop over to iTunes and rate and review and subscribe to the podcast because it really helps. Make sure you're following me on Instagram. Make sure you're following Jess on Instagram because she's really good. And I'll catch up with you next week for another episode.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.